Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hi, it's me.
It's Brian Brushwood.
Oh, yes. Very, very excited. The only thing that would make me more excited is if somebody were to have like an impressive physical update on their story of a product that they've brought to market over the last half year.
Well, my book, Magic and Mischief, which you can get... Oh, sorry.
Wait, no, you can. No, that's good. Keep going.
No, go. Here we go. Magic and Mischief.
No. Justin, are you shipping the Contender?
What? Oh my God, you guys, look at that. It's the box for the Contender. It's just an elaborate fraud that I've been perpetrating on everybody.
Well, it is one box, Justin. It could just be a hollow box with nothing inside. I could go make that at FedEx office. Wait, what are those?
Guys, here's our
instructions.
Our rules, right?
All right, but that I could print that on my home printer and see it's blank. There's nothing there. It's a
What? Those are cards. Hundreds of cards.
All right, it's some flimsy paper stock,
high
right?
High quality, full color
Wait,
cards.
Wait, no. It's thick. Look at that. Ooh, is that bone white?
Dude. we finally got in from our manufacturer out in Dallas all of the I guess it was probably 2,000 no little under 1,000 decks that came to us. All the rest are heading to fulfillment centers around the country. So if you ordered on the Kickstarter at the 150 level, I spent the vast majority of yesterday putting together all of your packages. You are going to be receiving two decks. And here we go. This is my vine of putting them together. Two decks, one of them signed. And then on top of that, a layer of other packaging stuff, the bipartisan button pack and
Christmas tree filling. What is that?
What was that?
Is that from a Christmas tree that you filled it with? Pine needles?
No, they're like, I don't know. It's this black filling stuff that, that Meg and Fawn had from another project, but it works really, really well. And it displays really well. So, so everything's going to be going out. It is all in boxes. We have everything printed up. USPS will be rolling by on Monday to pick them up. We could not be more excited to finally get this out, finally get this in the hands of people. You have no idea how nervous I am about people actually getting these in their hands and testing it out and playing it with their friends and actually like seeing what we've been talking about for these many months. But I don't know, man. I am awash with emotions. And finally actually seeing them yesterday for the first time, I think people are really, really, really just going to love this box. It has this, you know, and when you see it in person, it kind of has this sense of like, what the posters from the 70s looked like when they were new. Like it has this very retro, like it's not the relic. It is like how it was, you know, when the Kennedy poster first went up, this is what it looked like in all of its colorful vibrancy.
True story. When I was a boy in our attic, which I'd go up there every now and then, I'd find a couple, there was like wooden crates and I'd open up the wooden crates. And my father during the 70s, used to do Secret Service details for presidential campaigns. And when he was on those campaigns, he would grab buttons or whatever and save some of those. And so I would go up into the attic and there would be these old campaign posters and stuff, you know, inside the crates that looked exactly like your design there that had just been sealed away. The colors are still vibrant, still whatever. And it's neat. It's a really, it's, sir, you made a promise to people.
Yes.
That you were going to deliver this year.
By Christmas.
And you worked your ass off, your whole team, everybody. You guys, you made a promise. And there were a number of opportunities where you had excuses that were presented for you. Like, oh, well, these people said this. And now that we know that's not the case, we're off the hook because we can put the blame there. Like,
yeah.
Oh, we could do this, but blank, you know, turns out they're not as reliable. It's not us. It's on them. You had a number of opportunities to put that responsibility onto somebody else and to point it and say, no, we did everything we were supposed to do, but you did it. You did it. Well,
you know, and the biggest decision was just saying, hey, look, we're going to put ourselves financially in a more difficult position to print this in the United States, because to try and do it in China would have just taken longer. And that would, that, by the way, is the way that everybody does it. Everybody just does it in China. And it's not necessarily like the worst thing. We'll probably do future decks in China. But for us to make this promise, it was so important to us that a crowdfunding effort is a narrative. And it starts with you saying, having the fully fleshed out idea to say, come with us on a journey, right? And it goes through all that crowdfunding stage. And then what I think people forget so often is that, like, that's not the end. It funding is not the end of your story. That is, you know, a great moment, right? It is a victory, but it so much is just not where you need to take any time off. Like, that's the beginning of you making sure that you deliver on a promise. And that, for me, I know, is I don't fund creators who screw me over the first time. Mm-hmm. You know, it is your online reputation. We talked about that on, I forget if it was Weird Things or After Things last week, but the idea of the Chinese reputation calculation, you know, it's like, although it makes me queasy to think of a totalitarian government having power over that, it is absolutely true in how we think of socially somebody, whether or not they are going to be able to put something in your hands. And you got to be realistic about it. You have to be smart about it. You have to be willing to make sacrifices. But the fact that these are going to be in the hands of anybody who believed in this idea by Christmas, to me, is just all worth it, because now people feel good about it. How much more willing are they to go on Amazon and write reviews? He said, foreshadowing the fact that he'll be hammering on this for the next 6 months. How much are they going to be willing to talk to their friends about it, to play it at a party game? If whenever they look at the box, they have a good feeling. Like, that's, you know, it's just gigantic. I mean, it's just the only thing that you can control when it comes to that sort of enthusiasm. It's just making sure that your narrative stays intact.
There's a big problem in social media often is, you know, I talk to people who are like, yeah, I need to do blank. I'm going to get this. I'm going to get that. And I'm like, okay, yes, get a Twitter, get a Facebook, get all the stuff. But it's not just a matter of you just throw the stuff out there and then you carry on and do what you want and then expect that you can come back into it like some kind of carpetbagger and have all these people who are following you or whatever care and like you. That's not the way that it works. You might have people who click follow or whatever because, ah, it sounds interesting. But if you're not engaged, if you are not participating in that, that is you're the person that shows up and says, yeah, I was there. Where were you? Well, you weren't there for anybody, you know. And Brian spends more time than anybody I can imagine, you know, back and forth talking to people in sometimes the most inane discussions I would never want to get involved with. But he does that. I make an effort. You at reply me with a question. If I see it, I respond to it. And I check a couple times a day and I try to do that. Justin, you're super engaged with that. And with your Kickstarter, that carried over with you guys because we've seen this before and we've talked about it on this show is – somebody put something out there on Kickstarter and is like, hey, everybody come here. And you know, one is, you know, one, they don't have an audience one to begin to start selling it to. They just they treat it like it's a catalog thinking that everybody will find it. Sometimes a really compelling idea that can work. And then, you know, the other thing is that we've seen this where the production delays happen, more after delays, and some things you can't control over, but a lot of things you can. And then, oh yeah, we're announcing this for sale on Amazon. And like, I know we promised you guys would get it. You will. But if you want to get this, we need to do this. And it's like, whoa, you just screwed over your first most loyal set of customers. You will need you have just set the precedent for everything you will do from here on out. If you F over the people who are there for you when you're on the most shakiest ground, you're never going to be, you're never going to recover from that, you know, and that is a reputation in there. It stays with you forever. And I've seen that happen to a number of companies that they didn't project right. They didn't do right. Maybe they paid themselves too big a salaries or whatever. And then they have to make some sort of option to sort of bring the product to market. And part of that might be, you know, being like, oh, maybe like, no, we didn't go against our promise. If they think you did, you did. You know, if they think you did, it's the same effect as
it is. It's a bit like as a magician, it doesn't matter if they think the right method. The moment they have a method in their mind, they're not experiencing magic because they think they know how it's done.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a discussion with a very famous magician who's about that, who not David Copperfield, not David Blaine, but it was a thing like, oh, what'd you think of this? Well, I mean, it looked like it could have been this. And he's like, no, it's not that at all. Ha ha. I'm like, well, no, it could have been that.
Right.
What you did. You don't win because you did it differently, even though, you know, you left enough conditions that were open to it, that was just a weird misunderstanding. But yeah, it's where you start from. You know, I have a project I'm working on with a friend right now, and we both talked. We said we want to do everything from a point of sincerity. We want to make sure that everything we do is that, you know, doesn't mean we don't have to like be transparent and like, here's our business model, this is what we're making and all that, but very sincere about what our goals are, what we want to do for people, and not, I've watched other, and this is in the space of like tools and stuff or authors and stuff, I've watched other people in that space who are insincere, that I know what they're telling me they want to do and what they really want to do are not the same thing. And that feels icky.
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's something, and this can be kind of the center of after things, because it's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately. There's a difference between the behind the scenes view and like the front of the store view, right? Let's say that you have a physical store. There's how you order everything in the back, and then there's the presentation that you have up front. And they are two very, very, very different things. And if you let either of them unduly affect the other one, you will either not get the most efficient way for you to do your business behind the scenes, or you will let the cold mechanical efficiency of how you do things behind the scenes affect the presentation and get an overcomplicated, not as easily understandable way of looking at things. Andrew, without getting too much into what you are working on, you are working on something that will rely essentially on reputation and worth amongst authors. Like, if it does not have that, it will not grow. Now,
yeah,
when you look at it and say, okay, well, looking farther out, how can we make money on it? How can we, do this stuff? What you need to do, again, behind the house discussions that if you are responsible about putting that much time and effort into something, you need to think about, you could easily cut corners, be disingenuous, because that affects the idea that you need to take pride in how people interact with it. And they can't feel like they are just a piece of a puzzle. It is going to give them worth in a very real way.
You know, and you just touched upon something too that I think is kind of interesting. And I mentioned in previous podcast about what I liked about the way Brian and his team write their emails, their campaign mails. It's them talking to us. It's them talking to us. It's not, you know, anonymous ink. And if you start off, and again, I mean, there are all sorts of conditions and stuff. And I'm sure people are going to catch me in contradictions on what I say best practices are later on. I know I'm sure people are like, when you said this and you did this, I'm like, yeah, that was stupid of me. But I think that often what happens is people create, they have something sort of sketchy, or there's something about it they're uncomfortable with about the way the thing works. And as you start to take less pride in what you do, you don't want to engage in it, and you don't want to keep pushing the thing through and trying to do what you need to be doing. And I think that's a problem. If you want to create a business that everybody likes and you feel good about in doing it, but if you're in a position where you deal with people who a lot of people are unhappy or feel like you misrepresent stuff, that can make things very challenging, very, very challenging, to where you don't want to do it anymore. Having a specific example, but I'll give you an example. I have in the magic field. So one of the things is that I will do I almost never would do pre-sales on products because like I would be I never wanted to pre-sell anything that wasn't ready to ship because I'd seen people who would pre-sell stuff and keep missing ship dates. I have a book out called Magic and Mischief and I said it's shipping in December, you know, and all things going right, it's, you know, and I only put that out there once I had a physical copy in my hands, but I was going to make some corrections to it, whatever, and ship that out. Because my fear was, and we did this with when we did our iTricks products and stuff like that, is we would do pre-sale more to generate interest, but we would, if we had money in our PayPal account, we let it sit there. You know, we let it sit there until the thing physically shipped because we didn't consider it our money.
Right. Well, and there's very little that is as stressful as having taken money, especially in the case of the Contender. And certainly it was the case. We did the Arcana box, the Arcana artifact. We did pre-sales on those. When you have a sizable chunk of cash and you know that on paper, you've seen the proofs, you know that you've seen the examples of, you know, the puzzle box created, you know that this company that makes card games has a reputation for good work or whatever. It's fine and good to know that in theory, by all the numbers, all of those things should end up just fine and look good. It is another thing to reach that point where they get in your hands and you spread the cards and you're like, they feel right. It's like the weight of 1,000 suns comes off your shoulder at that moment. And you know that you did not lead your friends astray, you know?
Yeah, I did a sort of as a trial run, you know, just to see my ability to ship and get things done. When I did my Public Enemy Zero paperback release, I did those book plates. I lost money on every single one of those book plates I sent out, but that was fine. That wasn't the I knew that going into it. The goal was give people who are really into the book something to be excited about, and then on my end, figure out like, okay, how am I going to print out 100 labels? How am I going to print out 100 stuff? How am I going to go through all this stuff? So when I go do my magic book, I've already, you know, laid that groundwork and figured out all those sorts of problems because it is that, you know, I think just so many times people get into these things and they you know, if it was easy, everybody would do it.
Well, you know, in your defense, I mean, you might have lost money on every book plate, but I'm sure you made it up on volume.
Yes. That was the thing by plan. The plan was, all right, I'm going to price this book so I don't make money. But I know that if I spend a couple $100 sending these things out to people who are really loyal fans, that's awesome. For me, that's a great that's a win.
Yeah.
Maybe not a good
Absolutely.
Business.
Absolutely.
So real quick, random other vector in the space of, you know, creative people trying to, you know, figure out their game plan. This was the week that that I admitted defeat on pretty much everything that's not my field of expertise. I hired a bookkeeper this week because I realized that I am a liability for everything that's not being in front of a camera doing magic stuff. And, you know, I'm doing my best to help out Jaime with his launching of Holovect, but you know, he's asking, well, how do you grab you know, this video or that thing? And I'm like, my answer is like, I get someone more talented than me. And it's like and I realized it's taken me a long time to get here. I quit my day job in May of 99, so it's what, 16 years in, but I'm finally in that position where pretty much if I care about it looking good, I trust literally anyone but myself to do it. And it's weird because when you quit your day job and you become familiar with the tools of desktop publishing, with the tools of Photoshop or whatever, I was convinced as like, yeah, no, I can make it look super good, you know, and there are some projects I'm really, really proud of. But I'm even more proud of having reached that moment of being able to throw my hands up and say, let an adult do this, not me.
That's the challenge, is that the advice I got from my uncle, who was an artist and a pretty successful artist, is you're always going to be your cheapest employee, which means there's so many things that you just sort of let fall on your shoulder. But there comes a point where you have to say, all right, I need to get somebody else to do that. We have a friend who was given a legal contract, you know, and they went to us and said, what's your opinion? And our opinion is, well,
lawyer.
Talk to a lawyer.
Talk to a lawyer. You know, and it's like, yeah, it looks good, but it's what we don't know that should be in there that's the problem. And that's you know, drop the money on it. And they agreed readily, and Justin was able to provide a good name of a good attorney for them. And that comes down to where sometimes it's hard. You're like, ah, do I want to spend this cost? And sometimes though, it can be tremendously freeing because once you do that, you realize, oh no, I you weigh that. You say, okay, if I pay this, are those, do I have four more hours of productivity a week that I can really put to use?
And well, and it, at this point for me, it's not even a matter of like, you know, my time's so super valuable. It's a matter of, you know, it's a guarantee of quality that I am too close to the product myself. And so it's like, I trust other, I mean, I could pick which of three versions I like the best, but in general, I no longer trust myself to do any of the design work. I can wave my hands and describe what I want and then pay somebody who's a talented graphic artist to do it.
Well, part of it is also just understanding where you at in terms of strata, right? Like, do you are you proficient at Photoshop? Are you proficient at design? Are you proficient at understanding how to write stuff? Like, and there are some things for which I can rank myself and say, okay, well, I can do this. Like, you know, I can put this out. Do I need to hire a graphic designer for the stupid secretly gay president ebook? No. Like
right.
it's a silly ebook. I don't need to do that. But if you know Andrew has worked very 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 hard to get his skills in Photoshop and design up to a par where I believe it is something that you would see it is better than most books that come out. You know, and he has sharpened his skills to the point where there is a quality there, but not everybody has that. And being good at it is different than being able to blend in to the same things around you. Could we have done the contender as, you know, John designed a lot of the initial cards for the contender and they look like an engineer at Uber designed cards for a card game, right? It's all right. It's fine. Gets the information out there, but it doesn't look good. It certainly doesn't look like this. It doesn't look like what we wound up doing because now we've got a product that, like, you know, last night I went into our card closet and I took out all the card games and I put all of the card games that were in my closet on top of the contender box. And I'm like, that looks like it fits.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a bunch of professional designs and then some hot garbage, right? And that made me, in fact, I could say without pointing out which ones that's, I like our design better, you know, and that makes me so happy, but it's like, but that's a decision. That was a decision to give up a third of, I don't know whether or not that's smart to say, a third of our, of the contender belongs to Guts and Glory. We became equal partners, Guts and Glory, me and John, because to bring them in and make them invested in creating some of these, some of this design was really important for us if we wanted to think about this as not just a game we put out and sell to our friends, as like a larger, bigger picture. Let's actually sell tens of thousands, hopefully hundreds of thousands, you know, in the life cycle of the game. It's got to look like other games that sell at those numbers. And letting go of that is just, to me, the line between the glass ceiling of like whether or not I want to be X successful or Y successful.
Yep.
Justin and I went through this for years with our different schemes and plans and thoughts and things like that. And the, you know, when you have an idea and you realize that to really make it happen, you need to bring in talent. The best thing you can do when the really talented people make themselves available is to bring them on board, and it is to give them, you know, make them as much of a part of it as you can, because the reality is, here's the secret. There's a secret. When you need the help of somebody and you have somebody who can help you, who's really good at what you want to do and you get along with them, you're not losing half or whatever you give away. You're gaining the most important thing you could hope for, which is somebody else who can be as enthusiastic and as passionate about it as you are, because that's what you really need, is that, you know, it's this, the adage, you know, is that, you know, 100% of nothing is 100% of nothing.
Right.
And, you know, we focus sometimes on things like, Zuckerberg and Facebook and getting rid of the other people. Well, there was a long way where it was a group of people working on it before it kind of became him. And then he ended up being like the one kind of guy that was really going to see this thing. If it had been a team, it would not have been as big as it is now, you know. And, you know, you read, you know, on one side you read about Uber and you see about, man, like these guys are like nuts. But then you realize, man, if it hadn't been those guys running it, we'd be talking about Uber, you know.
Yeah.
And you hear that the press, like, how long are they going to let this guy keep as a CEO? I don't know. This guy turned it into a $45, $50 billion company, you know, valuation. I think as for all the publicity fallout, he seems to know something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the fastest growing company of all time. Is that still a thing? You know, I know it was once. You got to be very self-critical. That's probably, you know, the biggest thing that I realized or I try to realize every day, you know, like much like alcoholics, like you're never really out. You know, you can only remind yourself every single day that there's only so much I can do. There's only so much I'm good at. I need to be good. Great. I need to be top quality at what I am good at. And I need to surround myself with other people who can help bring everything out.
I think the important test is that, and I've talked a lot about, you need to be able to be an independent. You need to be able to do it on your own. There's the difference between when you're at the limit of your talent and what your talent can realistically expect to expand to, and when you're just being lazy.
Yeah.
So many times people go to me like, hey, I have an idea for a book or whatever. Maybe you write it. Like, no, maybe I don't. Maybe you write it. You know, like, you know, ideas are easy. Ideas are cheap. I've got thousands of ideas in notebooks and stuff that I think are fantastic, great ideas. There's just only one of me to write them. And in a project like I'm working on right now, like, I know my coding knowledge, you know, it depends on how much time I spend on it. I mean, I know enough to do certain things, you know, but I also know that at a certain point, I need to talk to somebody who's spent a hell of a lot more time in certain environments doing things than I do, because there's all the things that I don't know, like that legal agreement. Like, I can look at a legal agreement and say, yeah, there's everything here that I want and there's things I need to think about, but I need to bring in somebody who's going to go like, yeah, but you know, that's the things that aren't there that are really critical.
Yeah,
and that's the difference. But so many times people either just too quickly want somebody else to take the work, the hard part off their shoulders, and that's problematic, or they just don't want anybody involved, and they're going to make something that looks, they think they can do everything. They think they can do all the roles. And you go look through, I see this all the time in independent books, is just crappy covers, things like that, really horribly written descriptions. And maybe the book is great, but if they can't represent it well, it's a problem. And now it's so much easier. We've talked about before, 99 Designs, Canva, all that. You can get stuff done for, you can get, like, you know, go to Canva and you can get, like, you know, design book covers for free that look a lot better than a lot of crap out there.
Yeah, man, absolutely. That was a fast, fast half hour. I don't even really have much else to offer this week. Do you guys have anything else going on picks?
Well, before we, let's say if anybody has any questions for us for next week's episode, send them in. Send them to wherever. Wow. Write them on a note. Throw it away in a trash can.
Send them to me. You can just send them to neshcom@gmail.com. Include weird things in the subject title.
Or after
thank
things.
You.
Or after Nesh things.
After things.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
I unfortunately don't really have any picks outside of to say, you know, Holovect. Holovect is an amazing Kickstarter you should check out. Just Google Holovect and it'll take you to the Kickstarter.
Hell yeah.
So,
I gotta pick Creed. I went to go see Creed. It's a movie. It's about you ever hear that Rocky fella?
Rocky Balboa, the Italian stallion.
The Italian.
He's like, he's got a restaurant now. He kind of sort of, you know, ever since his wife died.
The brain damaged old dude who fought all of Russia.
He did. Yeah, he
swears
did.
Swears that there's no steroids involved.
In that Russian fight. His friend, Apollo Creed, supposed to be an exhibition. He dies in the ring.
Spoiler alert.
I saw the 30 for 30 about that.
Yeah, so it was horrifying.
Did you see that? I sent you a link to that, right?
His son.
Wait, did you see the faux 30 for 30 about that?
Oh my God, so good. So good. I love those faux 30 for 30s. In fact, that was one of the disappointing moment in the new with Bob and David episodes is that they kind of feign to doing a fake 30 for 30 and then didn't hit. You know, there's been so many good ones done that are so great at hitting all the tropes and everything of the 30 for 30 that I was disappointed that they didn't hone in on that a little bit more. But oh God, no, that one's so worth watching. The Space Jam one also is just so good. But anyway, so listen, there's a million reasons why this movie should be terrible. including Rocky, the Rocky franchise being yet another launching pad for a universe of people around Rocky. Do we really need to see?
But Rocky Balboa, the one that came out before this, was really good.
Really good.
It didn't get a lot of attention, but it was really good.
This is not directed or written by Sylvester Stallone, which I believe he did direct Rocky Balboa, right? I know he wrote it. This is Ryan Coogler. Yeah, directed. So this is Ryan Coogler. Ryan Coogler did Fruitvale Station that also starred Michael B. Jordan. This was apparently an idea he had before Fruitvale Station started shooting. He had this idea for Creed. And had basically the studio was really into it. Sylvester Stallone was not. He didn't want, he has had very bad experiences with other people writing and directing within the Rocky universe. He does not like Rocky V for that exact reason. And also kind of felt like it might have cheapened things. This movie rules. It is so good. It is great at playing against your audience expectations, especially with the score. The score always kind of just brings you to like, oh, is this a Rocky? This is the Rocky moment. These are the Rocky moments. Are you going to tip toward the score? No. We're going to bring it back. And it is really, 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 really good. It is well directed. It is probably one of the best sports movies I think I have seen in a very, very, very long time. And Michael B. Jordan is just a star. He is a can't take your eyes off him. Awesome force of will. All I'll say is this, movie's so good that by the end of it, you are rooting very, very, very hard for a rich kid with the boxing nickname Hollywood to beat the poor guy from the wrong side of the tracks. Like, it is amazing. It is really good. I wouldn't be shocked if Sylvester Stallone gets an Oscar nomination for his portrayal of Rocky. It's well done. And if anything else, here in the lesson of storytelling, since this is a podcast about and for creative professionals, it is all about, William Shakespeare once said, brevity is the soul of wit.
Don't waste my time.
It's great. Every moment that's like, oh, I wonder whether they're going to let this linger or they're going to be a secret kept. No, but get right to it. We're always at the point where a character's making a decision and getting into the next phase of the story. So rad. Creed.
Ryan Coogler, by the way, I guess he's got some of the little indie project coming out he'll be doing. Kind of an under-the-radar thing. You heard about this? And maybe it's a historical drama.
Is this another Star Wars flick coming out?
Nope.
Oh, Black Panther?
Yep.
Very, 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 very excited.
So he will be directing the Marvel Black Panther movie.
Great. He is. And this movie, I won't go any further, but to say the fight scenes are excellent they're excellent cinematically. It's not just kind of lockdown sports movie stuff. There's a lot of emotion and everything to it, but it's shot extraordinarily well.
From what I understand, they did the same thing. I think it was they did for, I think it was The Fighter, which was, Fighter, the Wahlberg one, they went and they talked to the HBO team that shoots the live fights. And so they did a continuous take fight scene, which is kind of a good way to do it if you can do it.
Yeah, there's a few of them. I don't know if it's spoiling to say that one of them is a long continuous take, but it's very, very well done. And all the fights, apparently, in an interview I heard with Michael B. Jordan, they had choreographed points that they wanted to get to, but everything in between was them kind of filling in. Like they had like a fight choreography that wasn't like step, 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 step. It was like, okay, we need to get to here. We need to get to here. When you get pushed into this corner, then you're going to react this certain way. But everything else between was them just acting and it pays off. It looks great.
Sweet. Glad to hear that. My pick is a documentary on Netflix called Electric Boogaloo, which is the story of Canon Films.
No way!
Really, really, really good, which goes into the personalities behind that. That, I mean, if you grew up in the, you know, in the 80s and
you
watched...
Canon was the jam, man. Canon, yeah. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking, you know, the Chuck Norris movies, they did Over the Top, and that was kind of towards the decline of there, but they brought back the Death Wish franchise and just these exploitive, way over, you know, insane kind of movies in the story of the producer and the director and the, you know, the producers behind Canon Film and their story from coming from the Israeli film scene to coming to here, and just a really well put together documentary. I think it's the same people that did the one about the Australian film industry, I believe. Cool. Yeah. So right, that's my pick, Electric Boogaloo, which comes from, they did the movie Breakin' 2,
yeah.
Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo.
So great.
Sounds good? We good?
Yeah.
Gentlemen, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.